Okay, Darren Yough, Head of History, Dykehouse School in Hartlepool.
Thank you. Please, can you tell me a little bit about yourself, your home background, parents and schooling, and whether you can remember the way you were taught history at school?
Yeah, I was brought up in the northeast, born in Durham, went to school in Durham, had what I would class as a normal working class upbringing. I went to secondary school, just normal, ordinary secondary school around the corner when I was 11. And that was basically my expectation. My mum and dad, my dad was a carpenter and my mum was a lollipop lady stroke cleaner. And the one thing I always wanted to avoid was going down the mines. I worked in a factory, and that's basically why I stuck in the school and ended up enjoying it. I left secondary school 16, went to a more middle class area, Framlingham Moor at the top of Durham, did my A levels there, passed them no problem, then went to university in Glasgow, and then came back down to Durham when I'd finished. I worked for 5 years after I'd graduated, before I became a teacher. I used to buy electronic equipment around the world. I used to do fencing. I was a blacksmith. I worked at the passport office. And I used to train kids to do electronics. And that's probably the main reason I became a teacher in the end, because we used to get these kids who were 15, 16 years old. And we used to take them on after school, take them on for 2 years, paying them £40 a week, promise them a job at the end, and then at the end of it, they didn't get a job, and we just took another 16-year-old on. And we thought, I wouldn't want any kid to go through that. And when my son was born, that basically prompted me to go into teaching. And history, the thing I always remember about history at school was I had good teachers, and that's all I always remember. When I was at secondary school, when I was 11 to 14, I had a teacher called Mrs. Bowman, who was outstanding, absolutely outstanding. She went on to become a head teacher, superhead and that afterwards, but she was absolutely outstanding. I always remember her. And going to when I did A-level, I had two history teachers there who were just outstanding.
What was really good about those teachers?
The thing about Mrs. Bowman was she was tough. She was tough, she was good, but she also brought other things in. She didn't just bring history, she brought politics into it as well. I can remember the day Maggie Thatcher fell. And she was calling out of the window for some people to come up. I've got it on the television to see this. And it was that type of thing. And when I was at sixth form, I had another teacher there. He had a terminal disease at the time. And he'd bring it into his lessons. And he just had phrases. And he has phrases that I still use. Like Goebbels was a nasty piece of work. And the kids have even wrote that in exams when they've done it. Goebbels was a nasty piece of work. And it's little things like that that I remembered. And it was always a subject I liked that. And it's sixth form politics. And I like the political aspects of doing history.
That's lovely. How did you learn to teach history? Was that mainly at Durham when you were doing PGCE or later?
Oh, I don't think I actually learnt that much about teaching history during my PGCE. I don't think the PGCE course is that good for the practical side. It ticks boxes, it gets you a qualification. But I would honestly say in my first 3 years when I was teaching, I was just establishing myself as a teacher. I didn't learn how to teach history. Once I became a head of department, that's where I really started to do that, because I was the only history teacher. I went from being one of two history teachers, a head of department and me, and I'd never taught GCSE. I wasn't allowed to teach GCSE in that time. There was always only one class, and the head of department got that. And when I actually got my own department, that's when I really started to learn. I went to a school I was a lot more comfortable with in Hartlepool, which has since closed down, which is where we're moving to in a couple of years. And that's where I really started to learn to be a history teacher. I learned to do different things. I came to a place where I wasn't new to the staff. I was an experienced teacher who'd come into school. I wasn't just a kid who'd just come from university. And that's where I really started to learn, in that little period I had at Brighton, where I was there for nearly 5 years, and that's where I learned to become a history teacher.
So did were you helped by materials, stuff you found on the internet, or was it something you just had to do on your own?
It's something that I had to do on my own. Previously, I was following someone else's scheme of work. I was learning myself. There's a lot of topics that I didn't have a clue on, which I hadn't even done at school that we knew from when I'd gone there, so I was learning that. And I was able to come in and put my mistakes behind me that I'd made at my previous school, which you do as an NQT. I'd always say it with NQT, if you can, move within 2 or 3 years of your first move, because you've got them mistakes following you through the rest of your time. When you're a more experienced teacher, you can take that on. And I was able to do that, because once I'd established myself, I could actually go in with the kids. And the kids had a bad deal in history at Breeden up to then. They'd had no teacher for the best part of a year. They'd had supply teacher. So me coming in was something very, very different. And that's where I basically learned to become a history teacher. It took us 3 years to be confident. 3 years to be confident enough to do that. Which I think really, I would always say it takes you 5 years to get established at a school anyway. A whole run through with the kids before you're really there.
And then you moved on to this school to take charge of a bigger department.
Well, basically what happened is the school closed. And I took history at Breeden from being the worst performing option subject to the best by a long way. We got results from sort of like 8 or 9% A to Cs to nearly 60-70. And when the school was going to close down, the head here, Bill, took over. And he basically offered me a job. I got offered two jobs on the same day, one at the local Catholic school and one here. And I took here because it's more my type of school. I do better in, I don't think I would have lasted very long at a very smart, very formal school. My teaching style is not that. I'd get in the sack within a week. My teaching style is, I'm jorky. I would say I'm tough, but I'm jorky. I bring stories in. I bring my own experiences in. And I prefer that here. And also, I trusted in the boss. I knew the boss. I knew what I was getting. I knew what I was coming to, and I was quite comfortable with that.
That's lovely. Thinking back to those earliest days in the classroom as an NQT, what kind of history did you most enjoy teaching and why?
Always was 20th century. Always loved teaching the 20th century. I think it's more relevant. It's also the one I've got the most experience of at university. My subject knowledge was there. And it's why I still do enjoy teaching Year 9. I still enjoy teaching Year 9. I'm not that keen on it for GCSE. I've always been preferred myself, school history project, doing medicine and stuff like that, because I've always enjoyed doing that. I did that at GCSE myself at school. So I enjoyed doing that. But I did prefer the 20th century. I found the hardest one that I actually found to teach, and I still do, is the Industrial Revolution. I find any aspect of that exceptionally difficult, especially being in Hartlepool, where there's not many things left of the Industrial Revolution.
That's ironic, really, because you could imagine somebody in the south of England in a rural area saying that, but here you're surrounded by mining areas, and Hartlepool has had a tremendous industrial past.
It's had it, but it's not there. There's no visible signs of the steelworks that are being queued. Of the docks, it's Jackson's Landing, it's shops, and it's very hard for the kids to see that. By the same thing, I did coal mining with the Year 8 a couple of weeks back, and where was your nearest coal mine? Don't know. I had to give so obvious clues that it was Blackhall, and it's frightening that in an area like Hartlepool, there's nothing left. There's literally nothing left of its industrial past, nothing.
And the children don't have any connections through their family with the industrial past at all.
In some cases, some of the kids that we teach, there's third generations who've never had a job. And that's one of the things with that. Some of the kids have never seen the factories that were here. My first memories of Hartlepool has been a dark, dingy, horrible place with the docks, with the pollution, shopping trolleys and everything like that. Going down there now, you'd never expect it. You'd never expect it. So always find the Industrial Revolution very, very hard. I've always found Year 8 hard. I've always found Year 8 hard because I think Year 7, when you start doing the medieval times, I think that's something you can get your teeth into. Year 9, you get your teeth into. Year 8, when you're doing the Stuarts, we do slavery. It's always the same. Stuarts, slavery, Industrial Revolution. I find Year 8 a slog. It's the Industrial Revolution is the one that I really, really, really find too hard. I really find that very, very hard. And I still do today.
Do you think that the children pick that up from you?
To a certain extent, yeah. I always say two things to the kids. And a lot of the kids, I play on this ridiculously. All the kids think I'm a sexist. I'm a terrible sexist. Because I've got lots of top sets that are mainly girls. So it's very easy to throw hand grenades in with them. So for example, I always say with Year 8, I think Year 8's more suited towards the girls. The way it's done, I think it's more suited towards the girls. I think Year 9's more towards the boys.
And why do you think that? What is it about the Year 8 syllabus that's more girlish?
I think it's more empathy. For example, we do the slave trade. We do the English Civil War, but it's mainly conditions in the English Civil War. It's very much the curriculum's wrote and the way it just naturally falls, the Victorians, it tends to be something that the girls can get the teeth into, and that shows in the national curriculum levels. The girls go up quite well in Year 8, the boys get that lag. Year 9, the girls continue going all right, there's no slack, but the boys start to pick up. And I don't know whether that comes in for me. But I think it's important. I always like throwing in what I call the sexist grenades with the girls, and especially in a place like Hartlepool, where a lot of the girls accept a lot of the sexist attitudes in the house and in the families. And it's amazing how many girls won't take you up on it.
So you're provoking them to try to defend their abilities,
and
they don't.
Well, the example I always use is I always tell the girls when they're doing the options that I'm wanting to introduce a brand new GCSE just for girls. So the boys can do wars and the girls can do the history of irons and cooking and cleaning. But that always gets a reaction. And that's what I try to provoke in a lot of things. I try to provoke a reaction in the kids. And it's actually frightening, the limited experience of that. And it's very frightening, especially how many girls accept the sexist attitudes of the lads. They'll accept sexist attitudes at home. And some of the girls who haven't even thought about different careers. Why don't you become a history teacher? Oh, nah, I'm done. Why would I want to do that? And it's hard, and I think that's one of the hardest things to do, especially in Hartlepool. It's a very macho type place.
Yes.
It is, and it's strange because most of my top sets are girls. Most of my top sets are girls. My top set Year 8 is 7 boys and 23 girls. My Year 7 top set is 6 boys and 25 girls.
That's so interesting, isn't it? They're obviously enjoying history, trying hard, but yet not aspiring in the way that you would expect them to.
And it's strange, and even in coming up to 8 years in Hartlepool, I've never got my finger on why that is the case. When it comes to options, it stuns me because we're very, very, very boy heavy, and I can't understand it because a lot of the girls, when you're going through, you think they're enjoying it, they're the ones who pick, but when it comes to picking it as a subject, it's the boys.
So do you think that's partly the Year 9 with the 20th century political history?
I think there's an element. I've got my revision class back today, and that revision class, and that class is, it's something like 11 girls and 25 boys. Sorry, 25, doing me what's wrong, 15 boys.
Mm.
And that's unusual, because the girls, when you do the surveys, and that seem to enjoy history more, but the lads picked as an option.
What sort of things do the girls pick then, instead of history?
Geography.
Why do you think they're more attracted to geography at the end of Year 9?
I think it's basically to do with the perception of history. I think history is perceived, and I hold my hand, and I I'm brave about this. It's the hardest GCSE. And I have no qualms about that. It's a difficult qualification. And we're competing, especially at this school, against four GCSEs to do PE, four GCSEs to do ICT. And when you compete against that, you can't. You can't compete against that. How many GCSEs is history worth? One. Oh, right. Same as PE, which I get four for. Right. And the girls are more screwed onto that. The girls are a lot more screwed onto that idea of getting your GCSEs. The lads will do what they enjoy.
So do these girls go on to do A-level history, perhaps, or not? Do you think that's the end of it?
I think it's mainly the end of it. And the strange thing is, it's the girls who get the better results in this area. My top two pupils in my year 11 class, who you'll see, are girls.
So will some of those go on to do A-level?
Yes. The top ones do. And the subject's becoming, I think, and this exam that we've just taken, I was telling you about earlier, is turning it into a more elitist subject. Kids are being directed to a certain extent away from history because it's a hard option. When the school's doing its CVA and stuff like that, it's harder doing it for history. And when it comes to that, it's always going to be a battle. It's always going to be a battle. But I always take pride in the fact that we don't stream history. Any kid can take history. I don't believe that you should close it off to anybody. We take whoever we get, and we'll get the results with that. And I don't believe in, nope, you're in the bottom set, you can't take history. You're in the second set, oh, you've got a 50%. I believe in the open system, never turn a kid away on that.
So in the first 3 years, they are setted?
Yes.
But then in the GCSE, you just take the classes as given?
Depending on how it goes. At the moment, we've got top set and a bottom set. And in year 10, top, middle and bottom. But for next year, that could be a top and a bottom set on one side and a mixed ability on the other, depending on how the option blocks work.
Yeah. Let's talk about something more positive, in a sense. What really switches the children on to learning history?
Stories. Stories is the one bit that left, right and centre turns the kids on to that. You tell the stories. You tell the stories and you bring your own experiences in. And I think that's what the kids enjoy about when we do it here. We bring in our own experience. We've got three different teachers who bring something very different. Lee's deputy head, he plays it straight. He brings his own experiences into his classroom. Brendan has worked in a bank. He's a more experienced teacher. He's been there, done that, got the T-shirt. And I've done different things before I do teaching. So we bring all of this into doing your teaching. So for example, we teach a subject like the Glorious Revolution. Something that is fairly dry, to be honest, but we bring it in a different way. So for example, when we're doing the Glorious Revolution, I'll walk into Brendan's classroom, because Brendan's Catholic, and we'll do the discussion about, should Brendan be allowed to be Prime Minister? And we'll do the same thing, and we'll use the provoking system again. Or I'll say to Brendan, come in, I'm going to be talking about we shouldn't have Catholics as Prime Minister, it's wrong. And I want you to, will you walk in and say something? And the kids think you've had an argument there about it. And it's bringing little things like that in. The other thing I find that works with the kids is discussions. I think it's great when you get the discussion work with the kids. You get, our kids will always ask questions. And getting that bit in works a treat. The other thing that I think works really well, which what we do, is little projects. We tend to run little projects such as the home front in World War II. We do that as a project where the kids can work singly in a group, they can use the computers and do the stuff that can do as homework. That tends to turn them on to that. With the lower ability groups, it tends to be keeping very short, little, very, very, very focused tasks. The one thing that we find hard is using ICT. I think that's supposed to be a thing that turns the kids on, and I find that a lot harder to use. All the kids have their own computers, but I think it creates more problems with the technology.
Why is that?
I think it's because the technology that the kids have is moving forward more quickly than the technology that the school has. So, for example, every kid in the school has their own little laptop, and they bring it to each lesson. But my wireless will work brilliantly if there's three kids working on it. If there's more than that, the system struggles to cope.
Oh, dear.
So it's one of them, but I think the one that the kids really like doing is getting something that's a bit more open. Something where they take a little bit more control over it. Because it's very easy to end up doing chalk and talk, which we have to do sometimes. GCSE is very much like that. But it's keeping the kids light, keeping the kids turned on, doing little projects. For example, my year 9 top kids are going out to the local primary school just around the corner, and they're going to be teaching the kids about Trimcom leadership that's in the Museum of Hartlepool. Go to there, actually teach a lesson, take the little kids round the ship. It's going to be very, very interesting. 5 and 6 year olds going up and down steps and that. And then going back and doing a follow-up lesson. So the kids are going to do the teaching.
Very, very adventurous.
And they're getting themselves into it. And the little group that we've got have done fantastic. Some of them are going back to the old school. Some have never been there. And we're going to do that around all the schools in Hartlepool with the top set. And we're going to try to roll that out every single year, develop the links with the primaries. But the kids are learning something from it because they haven't a plan. They haven't to think of the audience. They're having to do something that's not strictly national curriculum, but something that'll certainly help the history skills and something that'll help the literacy skills. So that's what we tend to use, that's what tends to work with the kids.
What have been the main influences on your ideas about how to teach history over time?
Talking to other people, talking to other history teachers. I'm very, very close to the head of English Martyrs History Department, and we worked together on a lot of things. We brought the new GCSE in together. We've worked on the new national curriculum together. It was like, oh yeah, that might work at your place, but it'll never work. And I bounce ideas off like that. And it's also working with more experienced colleagues. When I took over as a head department, I had a deputy head who was there who taught history. And I always knew, even when he started to teach English, that if I was stuck on something, I'd have a hand. Exactly the same here, where I've got another deputy head who's in the department, and if we're stuck, he gives you a hand. As I've got older, I've started doing things which I wouldn't have done before. Getting students into the department has been a big one.
University students?
Yeah, we're very well thought of by Durham University. We always are there for if someone's got a problem or they need to do something for 2 weeks to get through the course, or we've got someone we're worried about, we'll put them into Dyke House because they know they'll get the support. And seeing the kids come in, sorry, that sounds awful, the students come in and see what they do, because some of the ideas you sit there and think, oh God, I'll give that a go. Sometimes you put your hands in your head, but in other cases, just seeing the new ideas. I've got new ideas from a GTP who's in here doing a GCSE, they're doing a GTP, and some of the ideas she comes up with, I'm sitting there going, God, I'm going to use that. It's little things like that, and I think that's really important. Also, as I've got older, a few years back, I joined the Historical Association and getting teaching history, the magazine, which gives you some ideas. Some are off the wall. Some are very, very academic and off the wall, but some of the ideas in there are quite good and definitely worth a shot. But that's basically where it comes from over the last few years. My experienced colleagues, bringing people into the profession and develop myself professionally using stuff like that.
That's great. You mentioned the national curriculum. Have you found it helpful or restrictive in your teaching?
I've never taught before the national curriculum, so it's always been there. When I first came into teaching, I had probably the most negative view of the national curriculum we could possibly have, because I think I was the first or second year to go through it when I was at school myself, and it all seemed to be was teachers didn't spend the time teaching, they'd spend the time ticking boxes, and that put me off it. But it gives a bit of structure, that's the important thing. I haven't been particularly happy with this latest revision of the national curriculum. I think the latest revision of the national curriculum has become too thematic. And
so which themes stand out for you? What are the themes that they're pushing?
We've got, there's a lot of things where if you look at the national curriculum and the stuff that they've put in, a lot of it has no relevance to the kids in Hartlepool.
What examples would you give?
I'll use an example for one of the things that you can look at. India. Looking at India has absolutely no relevance to any of our kids. If you try to introduce it to them, it's a turn off, straight off. What do I know about it? If you're looking at some of the bits, like when you're looking at farms down south, that, what's that going to do with me? There's bits that might be relevant to a middle class school down south, but when you're in a working class area, some bits have no relevance whatsoever. History's important to expand the minds on that way, but there's a lot of emphasis on this, which has very little to do with a lot of the kids in Hartlepool.
But the issue about the empire and India was put in for a purpose, wasn't it? Mm. Do you think that it's something that white working class kids in Hartlepool need to grapple with, the empire, the multicultural society?
I think they do, but I think there's a lot too much emphasis on it in the national curriculum. I also think with that the way it's gone with the themes, you've got to have the chronology. And that is the big problem with our kids. You can't go here, there and everywhere with it. We know a school in Hartlepool that does, in year seven, it does the warfare aspect. Life. Ordinary life across the year. And I can't see how the kids can get anything like that. We've had to build the national curriculum that we follow with a chronology aspect in the first term and a half, and then go on to the themes. And I think for kids it's confusing. From an academic point of view, or someone sitting in an office in Whitehall, oh yeah, we do these, we do this, we do this, would be a great way of doing it. Practically, the chronology side, you've got to have that in somewhere. And I find the latest national curriculum's hard for that. I think the latest national curriculum's hard to get to grips with. That way, the old national curriculum I found no problem to handle. I knew how it worked. I even knew how the levels worked perfect. I could level things with a lot of confidence. Since the new national curriculum's come in and you're leveling work, everything's gone down a grade. So a kid who would have been on a level 3 is now practically now a level 4.
Is that because the concepts are more difficult in the new revised version?
I think the concepts are easier, because that's why I think kids who would usually have been a 3 and now a 4. Kids who would have been a 5 and now a 6. Kids who are now a 6 and now a 7. And the way the level descriptions have changed for it, it's basically inflated the levels.
Oh, I see. I misunderstood. Yeah. I thought you meant...
Yeah. It's inflated the levels. It's inflated the levels with that. But it's only 2 years since it's been introduced, so it's got to give time to bed in and stuff like that. But I found the national curriculum generally good. I preferred the old one. This new one I find a bit more difficult.
The old one was more strictly chronological, wasn't it?
From, yeah,
1066 right through to modern day.
And I think there was good elements in that. I think there was good elements in that. I think having a prescriptive national curriculum is tough. It's tough, especially when you consider that next year history won't exist in year 7.
In your school, you mean?
It's going to a thing called Discovery, where all the humanities subjects have a morning, and we cover bits, but where do we cover the national curriculum? There's bits of it which we will cover, but we've got to change it in year 8 and year 9 to fit that.
So in year 7 next year, you won't be doing, you know, the Normans, the Middle Ages, the Tudors at all?
No. We will have about 12 lessons which are dedicated history time, which will basically be the skills, and we'll probably get the Norman Conquest done in that time. The rest of the time its themes around the humanities topic. So, for example, we'll hop in. So, for example, we'll do the Holocaust on Holocaust Memorial Day. We'll have a few weeks doing the history of Hartlepool, looking at Ralph Ward Jackson, how it was created, stuff like that. It all ties in, but it's how do you fit the national curriculum elements into that? And the reason it's been introduced is for an obvious thing, literacy. Literacy is the problem within the school. And the idea is that with individual lessons on that, you're struggling to get the proper literacy in. And that's why it's combined to get a lot more literacy in. So you've got, say, two lessons to finish something off. So it's waiting to see how that'll go. But it's fitting everything in with the national curriculum, and that's how I'm... It's going to be a nightmare trying to fit everything in.
So it's history, geography and RE?
Yeah, and citizenship added in.
What do you think should be the balance between learning skills such as literacy or even historical thinking skills and working with evidence, etc., and then acquiring knowledge?
I think it's got to be balanced between the two. You can't have something that's knowledge-based, you can't have something that's skills-based. If you go to skills-based, you need the knowledge to implement the skills. And that's what I find that partly hard about the way the new national curriculum is written that way. You've got to have the content, you've got to have the knowledge before you can apply the skills. And I think that's where it comes from there. You need the knowledge before you can apply it. We use a lot of skills work, we use a lot of sources. We use Dammit from a very, very early age, year 7, early year 8. We use the idea of complex and simple inferences from year 7. I've got my top set in there. Yes, that is a simple inference. That's a complex inference. Using things like that from a very early age. And it's getting the balance right. It's getting the balance right and getting them to apply it. And we're chucking a lot of balls in the air and making sure that nothing falls.
I did notice on your website you've got quite a lot of exercises that are based on acquiring factual knowledge and memory skills. So are they just a backup?
They're basically a backup. A lot of lessons will be a lesson getting the knowledge and a lesson applying it. So for example, I'm trying to think of a good example on that. We'll do a lesson on the slave trade where we'll have a look at conditions, have a look at the knowledge, boom, 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 have a look at some sources and have a source-based exercise at the end of it. We also have a special unit right at the beginning where we do historical skills. So we do fact, opinion, bias, primary sources, secondary sources, written, oral, anachronisms, using
evidence.
That's
in year 7?
In year 7. It's the first thing that we do. We do a baseline test with them to see where they are. So the figures say they're on a level 4 for history. When we do it, they're actually on a level 2. So you actually know where they're at when they come in. And we develop the historical skills. I do one exercise where we talk about dealing with evidence, and I call it the boxes, where each group has a box. And in the box is something to tell you about something, solve the mystery. And the pasta boxes, and they've got 5 minutes on each box, and they've got to pick out what's in it and what it tells us. And very, very quickly, it takes about 3 boxes before they realise the person's me. And it's got little bits from me. It's got pictures of my children in. It's got football shirts in. It's got some DVDs. It's got bits. And the kids learn the skills that way. It's not necessarily history that they're doing, but they're learning the skills that they use in history. And it's keeping the balance. They've got to have the knowledge before they can use the skills. And that's what we're very heavy on. So, for example, in the new national curriculum, in year 7, we study, boom, the Norman Conquest, the Tudors, okay? And then we apply the skills in the second bit. So we give them the knowledge first and then apply it, okay? But it's getting the balance right. You can't go too heavy on the skills, you can't. But you can't go too heavy on the knowledge. It's not overwhelming them with knowledge. And that's what I find with the new GCSEs. I find the new GCSEs are very hard on that. You've got to put the knowledge in because you don't know what the exam is going to be like. The old GCSE, you knew the papers, you knew what came up, you knew what you could miss out. You knew what was coming. The new GCSEs, you don't.
Is that a big change that's just been made?
Yeah. We've got, for example, I could show you the books behind, where the books that you buy for the subject cover absolutely everything. And that's not what you need as a school. You need a much more simplified version, redoing America, the USA, between the wars. And that used to be nice and simple, that's why we picked it. Now with the GCSE, it's content heavy. And we've lost a period to teach it in. We get 100 minutes a week. English Martyrs up the road gets where 350 minute periods, 150 minutes a week. Goodness. And they're doing the same course. So it's a hard thing. It's getting content heavy at GCSE. And this new GCSE was supposed to be less content based and more skills based. And it's balancing them. And at the moment, it's hard because they've introduced a brand new national curriculum and brand new GCSEs at the same time. And I'm sure in 6 weeks' time, it'll probably change again.
I was going to ask you whether you think it's important for history in school to promote a sense of national identity through the teaching of British history.
I think there's got to be big elements of British history in there. We tend to get the British history out the way in year 7 and year 8 and then widen it in year 9. Because it's more relevant. It's more relevant. When we look at some of the things that you could teach at the, in the national curriculum, the French Revolution and stuff like that, relevance-wise, I think you struggle. I think you would really struggle with the type of kid that we get. I think it's trying to turn them on to certain subjects. I think Britain, You need to get the bit of national identity in there. You need to get that sense. But I think the way that they're teaching.
Am I early?
You're talking about the importance of identity with history.
Okay. I think it's important that we get the national identity bits through. But for example, I find the British Empire, the way we have to teach the British Empire on the national curriculum is very, very hard. Because it tends to show the negative sides, and it's trying to get the balance between that, trying to show some of the positive sides of it and the negative sides of it. It's amazing how many kids don't know the position that Britain once had in the world. And I think the way the national curriculum went to a certain extent towards the early 2000s, that tended to be forgot to a big extent. And this idea of national identity people really struggled with. But where do you throw it in? Now you've got to have a section on the countries of the British Isles. Yeah. And that's hard. And that is hard, of how they came together, how they got on with each other. Yeah, that's something you can cover, but should it be a discrete subject? And I find that bit hard on that. I find that hard. But I think it needs to definitely have a very strong British element. And bringing in the British element for GCSE is something that I agree with 100%. Because you could actually go through the whole of the GCSE and not cover Britain in any shape or form.
But you have a section on Britain, don't you? In your
Yes, we do. GCSE. Britain in World War II. Our current GCSE, we don't. We do the Battle of the Somme, Vietnam, international relations, USA and Germany. So we didn't touch on it whatsoever. Now we do. We have to. So, yeah. We touch on it a little bit with Britain in World War II, one question in the exam. But I can understand why it's being done. But what I would like to see is history left alone for a few years. At the moment, even in my time in teaching, 10 years, the political side of it's just gone boom, 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 boom. And the subject needs to be left to settle at the moment, but I'm sure in 6 weeks' time, if anything changes, we'll probably get more emphasis on British history. It'll change again.
Why do you think the Holocaust and the slave trade have been mandated by government for the history curriculum at Key Stage 3?
I think it's two subjects which I would agree personally that you have to cover. Problem is, there's overlap. When we're doing the Holocaust, we've already done bits of this in RE. That's hard. That's hard on that.
Because the children have preconceived notions about it from RE.
Yeah, and I think the Holocaust is vital. The Holocaust is vital to put in for empathy, understanding, stuff like that. It's got to be there. And again, particularly in somewhere like Hartlepool,
Because there's not so much contact with people from other backgrounds.
There's none. There's very little whatsoever. When you go along here, the number of kids who have English as a separate language is 2 within the school. The idea of studying any other culture is just completely foreign. For the first time this year, I've had 3 or 4 kids have to be removed when we've done the Holocaust because of comments that have come up. We've had dirty Jews. We've had we've got kids whose parents are members of the BNP.
And how do you address that?
It's difficult. It's exceptionally difficult. It's if you know your classes, and it's putting things in there that are adaptable. But even then, this year, this group of year nines in particular has been difficult. I've never known the Holocaust be difficult to teach. It's always been fairly straightforward, test emotions and stuff like that. But I found that difficult. But I agree, it's one thing that's got to be in there. And I think putting things in with Holocaust Memorial Day, we do something across the school with that. So yeah, I agree 100%. We have our all of our last term at the moment in year 9, which is the Holocaust. Okay. We show 2 films on there, depending on the ability of the group. The higher abilities, we show The Pianist. The lower abilities, we show Escape from Zanzibar. So basically, we show different things on that. We do group work, we do source work with it. We even do little bits of empathy. I always like doing the exercise where I put the different groups around the room who were persecuted, gypsies, homosexuals, Jews, and I get them to move around which group would have been the easiest to persecute, which one would have been the most difficult, which one do you think would be able to hide most easily, and doing bits like that. So I agree with the Holocaust 100%. I also agree 100% with the slave trade. I think the slave trade is very important, and I think it's an easier way of putting it in somewhere like Hartlepool than doing some of the other topics that you have to do to get the multicultural and Britain's empire and bits of that in. I think the slave trade is great for that. I think the slave trade was great for that.
Why do you think it's easier than some of the other topics?
I think it's something that people can relate to instantly, the idea of slavery. I think it's something that when you do it with the kids, they can relate to it fairly instantly. There's a lot of resources that you can use on it. It's something where you can use symbols of it. So I used the trip around Liverpool when I got a camcorder and shown some of the symbols that you can still see there, showing Liverpool's role in the slave trade. And I think the slave trade is very, very, very important for that. And I think the two topics are mandatory, and I can agree with that 100%. I enjoy doing the slave trade in year 8. I enjoy doing the slave trade in year 8. The kids do as well. They've produced some very good work on it. We get them to write a letter as though they are a slave to get the empathy and use the sources from the books. We show them a bit of Roots. Sometimes use Amistad. We use bits and bobs in there that they can use to develop the empathy skills. So yeah, I would agree that, I agree with the two things in there that they must be taught. I would also add something in there myself, to be perfectly honest. I would probably... Okay, the one thing I would add in there that you must do is the English Civil War. I would probably add that in as another topic because I think it's an important event. I think it's that way. And I think it also says something about the politics that we still have in Britain today. So I think it's something that you could add another couple of things in there, but I would agree 100% must do this Holocaust, must do slavery. But I would say that the RE elements on this have got to be done somewhere else. And there's got to be a bit, they've either got to say it's history or they've got to say it's RE. The idea of doing both, oh, are we doing this again?
Yeah.
Also, when we do the First World War, in a lot of cases to do poetry in English. Oh, we're doing this again. So it's having to interact with different departments for it. But no, I agree that the two things should be in.
Do you think exams in history, now we've already referred to exams, but do you think they've got better over time or not?
You talked the wrong person here for that one at the moment. The experience we've had with the new GCSE that's coming has been horrific. Absolutely horrific. I find the to-ing and fro-ings between exam boards appalling. I got used to the new GCSE, the old GCSE that we had, and I thought that was quite good. I couldn't see a reason to change it. If it isn't broken, why fix it? Why they changed the GCSE, I have no idea.
So the main change has been a move from more structured questions to more open questions?
Yeah. But I think the way it's been done, it hasn't been explained properly by the exam boards. We even do now the controlled assessment, which is the coursework by another name. And the exam boards really don't know. When you go to advice, you're getting conflicting advice. When you read everything, it's contradictory. It's contradictory on everything that they do. They seem to have put it in without thinking about it. When we were picking the new GCSE that we were going to follow for the next few years, we found it difficult to choose, and we chose at Excel because we thought the modular option was best. And when we did the exams, it's proved anything but. I think the idea of having different exam boards is something that really does need to be looked at.
So you prefer one exam
board? One exam board. This is what you're doing, this is what we're doing, bump. Having to choose between the different exam boards, one of them is a commercial company, others a charity. It brings elements in that shouldn't be in. And I think the exams have become in a way more accessible, but if they're going to be marked at the same standard as what these last exams that we had were marked at, then history's going to disappear off the curriculum. Kids aren't going to pick it. It's already happening with year 9. Don't take history in year 10, because A, it's too content led, and B, you won't pass the exam. That's what's come down. That is what's come down with it. Because we've introduced a brand new GCSE when we've lost a period of time to teach it. So as a result, it's content-led. And when we're doing the exams, the kids are getting results that just say, well, don't take history. And if my kids were getting the results that they got off the last set of exams, I'd tell them not to take history as an exam. What's the point when you can take 4 PE GCSEs, do PE, get 4 GCSEs? A subject that one teacher said in my classroom, a spoon could get 4 C's for this subject.
Was that a PE teacher that said it?
Yes. And that's what comes out. When you compete against that, you can't compete. And what the exam boards are doing with these new GCSEs, they're making that even harder. So GCSEs become a lot harder. I haven't enjoyed teaching year 10, and that's appalling, because GCSE is what I love teaching, and I haven't enjoyed this new GCSE. I haven't enjoyed it in any way, shape or form.
That's sad. Can I ask you about technology and what impact it's had on your teaching?
It's had quite a bit, as you've seen from the website. I put forward a website to put all my materials on. So if kids miss anything, they can catch up. We've got podcasts on there, which you've probably seen on there. But it's had a big... The one thing that's had a big effect on is the interactive whiteboards. Okay, the interactive whiteboards has been excellent, because you can put your learning objectives up, you can link your units that we do, and we did this lesson, this is our next lesson, you can link it like that. And the PowerPoints that you can actually put up, which are now, you can put up which are interactive. So that has had one hell of an effect over the last 4 years since I've had one. We've got a computer room here, and all the kids have the computers, but as I say, the technology's moving ahead of the school's ability to cope with it.
I wanted to ask you, actually, because in your form you mentioned that you don't really use DVDs in year 10 and 11, and I was surprised, because you're doing a modern world GCSE.
We have not got the time. So for example, there's 3 DVDs I'd love to show for what we've done at the moment. I like to show The Untouchables for Prohibition. I like to show Mississippi Burning. and we can't. We just simply have not got the time to do it. We have not got the time to do it. And it's just shameful. It's shameful that we haven't got the time. And the things that we enjoy doing has been sacrificed for the content. And I love using DVDs, I love using stuff like that. I use the Key Stage 3 because I think it really does enthuse the kids. If you look behind you, you can just see a pile of the type of things that we've been using the last few weeks. the spine's the wrong way around, unfortunately. But it's that type of thing that we're doing. It can get kids involved. It can get kids involved. And, for example, with our low ability groups, I always like showing The Great Escape for World War II. Because I think it says a lot about World War II, better than watching something like Saving Private Ryan, where you can get the graphic bit of it, but the idea of the two sides, how people fought, what it was like, is it realistic? That type of thing. It gets good debates going. So it's various things like that. We do have access to the new technology, but the new technology is probably ahead of us.
In the new school, presumably.
It will be all different. Yeah. But at the moment, the technology is ahead of where we are.
Really, this last question is referring back to something you mentioned, recent trends in the school curriculum, which are squeezing the time available for history. Do you think that's led to a drop in status of history in your school?
Yes, definitely. We are what I would class as a fifth division subject.
And that's not because you're not popular?
It's because of the CVA and things within the school. Division 1 is maths and English, because that's what the school's judged by. Division 2 is PE and technology, which are the specialisms of the school. Division 3 is anything that has multiple awards, which you can get big GCSEs for in the time that you're given.
So BTEC awards.
Yeah, like that. Leisure and tourism, stuff like that. Engineering is the third division. The fourth division is the other options subjects. I was single options, so I would say things such as media, that type of thing. And the fifth division is the option subjects that are hard, MFL and history. And in our school, we have a fifth division subject. And it's because it's hard. And that is why.
So you're saying that it's hard, but it's not perhaps valued by the students or the school as much as...
It's valued by the students because our options are always high. But by the school, it isn't, because our contribution to CVA is practically nothing. The top kids, yeah, will get A's and B's, but they won't get the A stars, because A stars in history are hard. And we're never going to add the CVA in that, and because of that, we won't get the status within the school. We can work as hard as we can, but because, on average across the board, I think history's a half a mark down on English. Half a grade to a grade down on English. If you're being compared, that you can't compare. And as a result, the subject's losing its status. And until they abandon...
I'll just ask you the last question, if that's all right. Just to finish off, if you could choose any historical topic to teach, what would it be, and to what age group?
My favourite topic to teach, I would honestly say, would be the Battle of Hastings to Year 7. I enjoy that because the kids are enthusiastic right at the beginning of Year 7. I also think it's a topic that you can get your teeth into. You have good guys. Have your pen there. Yeah, you've got them very, very early. You've also got a case of something on where you've got good guys, you've got bad guys, you're getting historical skills in straight away, you're getting the chronology in, you're getting everything in very early. And I always do my running up and down the classroom bits in there, because I think it's a very easy topic when I'm doing the Battle of Hastings.
How do you mean you run up and down the classroom?
Well, I'll tell the story of the Battle of Hastings, where they're marching up on horses. Clash against the shield wall, run away, that type of thing. And it gets the kids enthused. And you can actually, we end up doing an essay on why did William win the Battle of Hastings. And it gets them straight off doing an essay skills, which is what you need to get the higher levels. But that is the one I love doing. I like doing the Battle of Hastings with all groups, because you've got the kids and you get them very, 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 very early. The other thing I enjoy doing is I enjoy the topic of Henry VIII. Henry VIII is the other one I really enjoy doing, because he's another one, the kids are on your side when you start. I know all about this, I know that. And you've got them. It's something they know about. You're not teaching them something that...
They know a little bit.
Yeah, they know a little bit. And you could make that a little bit more, in a little bit more depth. So that's the two topics I like, the two Year 7 topics. I enjoy teaching as a whole, the 20th century, but topic-wise, as I say, it would have to be the Battle of Hastings.
Thank you very much, Darren. That's lovely.